When you use an oral bisphosphonate, which one do you use?
I think it's dealer's choice. I think I would treat that patient like osteoporosis, either Fosamax or Actonel. I would start at this point with oral bisphosphonate, although we're all waiting for data from the intravenous zoledronic acid therapy. Whether we can use every six-month schedule, what I personally do is I'll use an oral bisphosphonate. If it's not tolerated, then you can use pimidronate every 6 months or zoledronic acid every 6 to 12 months, and I think we're waiting for the studies to define that a little more.
What were your thoughts about the Austrian study that looked at premenopausal women who got ovarian ablation plus an AI and then the bisphosphonate?
Yeah. Well, Michael Gnant in the Austrian Breast Cancer Group has done some wonderful work, as you point out, looking at GnRH agonists plus TAM or GnRH agonists plus anastrozole. And not surprisingly, they've shown significant bone loss when you shut ovarian function down with a GnRH agonist, and especially with the addition of an aromatase inhibitor such as Arimidex. Interestingly, they've shown that you can prevent bone loss in that situation with zoledronic acid, intravenous zoledronic acid. In similar fashion, Adam Brusky has shown, I believe has been on your tapes before, Neil, with the ZFAST study, showing that upfront zoledronic acid can prevent bone loss as opposed to delayed zoledronic acid for 6 or 12 months where you lose significant amounts of BMD once you start an AI. So I think it's pretty clear across the board that either the AI in the postmenopausal woman or estrogen deprivation plus or minus an AI in the premenopausal woman is very detrimental to bone in many of the patients and needs to be monitored and treated appropriately.
One of the things that was interesting in the ovarian suppression plus tamoxifen arm was that these people lost bone. I think before I saw that, I had the feeling, well, tamoxifen is bone protective completely.
Yeah, I had that impression also, but certainly in the older days and indeed in recent time when we have an occasional patient who, for whatever reason, you don't want to use an AI on, tamoxifen doesn't protect bone in all people. I think these people need to have their bones monitored at least every 2 years on tamoxifen, and I do that. I don't do it yearly, but I've seen some people, not a lot, but I've seen some people who do continue to lose bone at a relatively expected rate, even in the face of tamoxifen. So it's a better drug in terms of bone sparing than AIs, but it's not perfect.
Of course, the original AI studies, unlike ATAC, didn't do bone mineral density monitoring or bisphosphonate intervention, which is now kind of standard. When you see a patient today whom you're going to begin on adjuvant AI, how do you counsel them? Do you tell them that there's going to be an increased fracture rate, or do you tell them the current approach is that's not very likely?
Well, I think there was some bone monitoring in the ATAC trial.
I think it was a sub-protocol.
I think Tony Howell did that as a sub-protocol. I think you're entirely right, Neil. Yeah, I think when you start talking to a patient who you would put on an AI, which is terribly common nowadays, it's almost everybody, that's certainly one of the complications that you talk about. You talk about the acute side effects of an AI, which might be arthralgias, not feeling terribly well, joint pains, muscle pains. But you certainly outline to that patient what you're going to do in terms of monitoring their bone and why you're doing it. And why you're doing it, as you rightly point out, is that all the AI studies have shown an increased bone mineral density loss and an increased fracture rate, and you need to make the patient aware of that. The clinical problem comes up when a 70-year-old lady comes to you, either plus or minus adjuvant chemotherapy, and you're selecting your hormone therapy, and we always do a BMD prior to selection of therapy, and she comes in and she's got a T-score of -3, and she's not been on any osteoporosis therapy. Well, do you use an AI on that patient, or do you use tamoxifen on a patient? Well, tamoxifen, as you and I know, Neil, is a superb drug, which was around for 25 years and was the standard until this point. And you need to then, I guess, weigh the risks, benefits of your therapy as you do with all therapies. And what's the risk of her breast cancer? What are the chances of it coming back? Do you do the switching strategy? As many times I've heard your guests on your program, pending the results of Big 98, do you give that lady who has a low risk 2 or 3 years of TAM and then switch for 2 or 3 years to an AI? Yeah, we've done that. Certainly what you don't want to do is you don't want to end up with that lady worsening her T-score, fracturing her hip, and having immobility and all the risks and problems associated with the fractured hip. So I think you need to individualize therapy. You certainly need to be aware of the risks of an AI. And yeah, there are a number of patients in whom I backed off and not given an AI because I was more concerned about her bones than I was about her breast cancer and hurting her. I think that the study of bony problems in cancer patients, be they metastatic disease or be they the complications of our therapy, are an emerging area, an exciting area. We're in its infancy, And we've got a lot of new understanding and new knowledge and new drugs coming in the next couple of years that will greatly benefit our patients in all ways and make the therapies that have been such great advances, such as the use of AI, safer for us in coming years.